Welcome to SCOTUScast, a project of the Federalist Society for Law and Public Policy Studies. Our contributors join us from around the country to bring you expert commentary on U.S. Supreme Court cases as they are argued and decisions are issued. The Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker.
Thank you for joining us for this post-decision episode of SCOTUScast, Free Exercise and Public Funding Edition. I'm your host, Christopher Goffis. On June 26, 2017, the Supreme Court decided Trinity Lutheran Church of Columbia v. Comer. The Learning Center is a licensed preschool and daycare that is operated by Trinity Lutheran Church of Columbia, Inc. Though it incorporates religious instruction into its curriculum, the school is open to all children. The Missouri Department of Natural Resources offers playground scrap tire surface material grants to organizations that qualify for resurfacing of playgrounds. Trinity Lutheran's application for such a grant was denied under Article 1, Section 7 of the Missouri Constitution, which reads, "No money shall ever be taken from the public treasury, directly or indirectly, in aid of any church, section, or denomination of religion." Trinity Lutheran sued, arguing that DNR's denial violated the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment and the First Amendment's protections of freedom of religion and speech. The district court dismissed the suit, and a divided panel of the U.S. Court of Appeals for the 8th Circuit affirmed, concluding that the First Amendment's Free Exercise Clause did not compel the state to disregard the broader anti-establishment principle reflected in its own constitution. By a vote of 7-2, the U.S. Supreme Court reversed the judgment of the 8th Circuit and remanded the case. In an opinion by Chief Justice Roberts, the court held that the DNR's policy violated the rights of Trinity Lutheran under the Free Exercise Clause of the First Amendment by denying the church an otherwise available public benefit on account of its religious status. Justices Kennedy, Alito, and Kagan joined the Chief Justice's majority opinion in full, and Justices Thomas and Gorsuch joined except as to footnote 3. Justice Thomas filed an opinion concurring in part, in which Justice Gorsuch joined. Justice Gorsuch filed an opinion concurring in part, in which Justice Thomas joined. Justice Breyer filed an opinion concurring in the judgment. Justice Sotomayor filed a dissenting opinion, in which Justice Ginsburg joined. And now, to discuss the case, we have David A. Cortman, who is lead counsel in Trinity Lutheran Church of Columbia v. Pauley, and is senior counsel and vice president of U.S. litigation for the Alliance Defending Freedom.
The case was an interesting case, as you can imagine, when it first came to us and we heard about the facts that this was about kids playing on the playground and the fact that they were disqualified from receiving a government benefit because they chose to go to a religious preschool. We certainly thought those were great facts, and I think that ended up proving true throughout the case. And I think that was one of the things certainly gives what we would consider good atmospherics to a case when you have those type of good background facts. But what I think is important about the way this program was set up is the way that it was originally designed by the state of Missouri. Certain states throughout the country have these type of recycling programs. This specifically was passed several years ago, and it's for the purpose of cleaning up the state, its landfills, its rivers, its streams of scrap tires. We know those are an environmental hazard and certainly a nuisance on many different levels. So the state, they began this fairly complex recycling program, and one part of the program was the ability to receive a partial reimbursement grant for recycled tires that were used for either running track surfaces or, in this case, for the surfaces of playgrounds. And the state opened up this specific part of the program to not-for-profit preschools and other not-for-profit entities, including government entities that had playgrounds attached to them. Everybody was permitted in those groups to apply. There was quite a complex application to submit with diagrams and several quotes from vendors and what the material was going to be used for. Also had over 16 different neutral criteria, and the government took in all these applications. It happened to be 44 the year that Trinity applied, and it graded them on a predetermined scale of how you satisfied these different neutral criteria. And what it did is it graded all these, and then the top certain number would receive a partial reimbursement grant depending on how much was in the fund. Now the fund, that basically was a 50 cent tax per tire on any tires purchased. And so that would go into this separate fund, and at the end of the year, that would be the amount that was put toward these reimbursement grants. There was a certain amount of maximum, I believe it was $20,000, that was allowed to be requested in each grant, and some would ask for less and some would ask for that amount. And so that determined the number of grants each year that would be permitted. In this particular case, it ended up where Trinity Lutheran not only did well in its scoring, it actually was ranked fifth out of 44 different applicants based on these neutral criteria, and was slated to receive a grant as 14 grants were given. But then once the state realized, looking at the application, that the Child Learning Center preschool was actually owned and operated by Trinity Lutheran Church, it actually disqualified them from the program, even though it had already scored them high atop the rankings of everyone who submitted that. So they actually wrote them a little email and said, we apologize, realizing that you're actually owned and operated by a church. Our state establishment clause provision, some people call it a Blaine Amendment provision, as we did in the briefing, disqualifies you as we're not permitted to allow any direct or indirect aid to go to churches and, as they wrote in their brief, other religious organizations. So we were contacted by the preschool, and what was interesting about it is they, too, didn't quite understand that if they qualified for all other criteria given by the state, why they would be disqualified solely based on religious status. And so we filed the litigation in the district court and thought it was a pretty good case, thought the facts were pretty clean, there wasn't a lot of discrepancies, everybody agreed and stipulated to all the facts. The question was, as a legal matter, would the state be allowed to disqualify the preschool solely because of its religious status, and could they rely on their state separation of church and state, their state establishment clause, their state Blaine Amendment. Interestingly, of course, Locke versus Davey, which was a previous case ruled on by the Supreme Court several years ago, was one of the main cases that was analyzed by both sides. And the pundits, of course, discussed it. Would this be the case that governs? Is it the same as Locke versus Davey? Is it different? We were unsuccessful at the district court, and the court basically ruled that Locke versus Davey discussed the play in the joints. Is there this room between what the Establishment Clause prohibits and what the Free Exercise Clause requires? That play in the joints, is that where this falls? Even if it didn't violate the Federal Establishment Clause, which the parties agreed to, could it still then violate the State Establishment Clause? And so the court basically ruled that it wasn't a violation, it wasn't required by the Free Exercise Clause or the Equal Protection Clause, and we had some other claims that we dropped as it went up. But the court said it wasn't required and there was no violation of the federal constitution. They were permitted to do so based on the play in the joints and Locke versus Davey. Went up to the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals, where we fared a little bit better. We lost but got one dissenting judge, Judge Groinder, and he basically ruled that this was a violation because it excluded based on religious status, and Locke versus Davey is not that expansive. We actually asked for a rehearing in that case, and it was a 5-5 tie, which was a little bit better, but a majority is needed for rehearing on bonk to be granted, and so it wasn't. It was taken up to the Supreme Court. Interestingly enough, the case was quite a roller coaster, as you could imagine, but shortly after cert was granted, Justice Scalia passed away, and so everybody was pontificating about was there a split in the court? Would this be a 5-5 case? What would happen to it? And I think that was kind of fueled a little bit because the case sat over a year before argument was set, from I believe it was January of last year to April 19th of this year when it was argued. And so there was a lot of speculation, a lot of opinion swirling based on that time, and of course the election, no one knew, you know, who was going to win the election, and then who would be appointed on the court to replace Justice Scalia's seat. And so obviously we didn't know what to expect, and as you all know, Justice Gorsuch was put on the court. So it was an interesting, I guess, evolution, the way the case worked, as many ups and downs and excitements and disappointments and, you know, positive thinking, questionable thoughts, what's going to happen. So it was quite interesting as the case worked its way through the courts. And, of course, what also happens is the case gets distilled quite a bit. Issues get clarified, issues get dropped. And then, of course, the question has to be, what is something that the Supreme Court would be interested in this case? And, of course, most cases bring 3, 4, 5 different claims, but that has to be narrowed to an issue the Supreme Court may be interested in. And then, of course, in the cert petition, you have to decide what is most likely to get the court's attention and how do you brief that to bring it to the court as a way to say, look, there's some guidance needed here. Not only is this an important federal issue, but there's a conflict in the Court of Appeals, which is, as everyone knows, is one of the main reasons why the Supreme Court grants review in these cases. And so the idea is bringing up the cert petition with this whole question about Locke versus Davey. What does it stand for? How far does it reach? And there's many different law review articles and blogs and opinions that have been expressed over the years. Did the court limit it to that specific issue of, is there a funding of a vocational funding of clergy? Was that the specific issue, or was it much broader to any historical establishment clause interest or any interest that could be deemed to not only not necessarily even to violate the establishment clause, but to raise establishment clause concerns? And so one of the interesting issues is the state was making the argument that even though they conceded it did not violate the federal establishment clause, that once it raises significant establishment clause concerns, that should be sufficient for it to fall in this gray area, this play in the joints area. And that brings its own issues and questions, is how big is that area? And even if there's, which is seemingly always raised by the state or the government, whoever the actor is, it always potentially raises establishment clause concerns. Seems to be the question is whether it actually violates the establishment clause. So one big issue was, if it's sufficient to simply raise an establishment clause concern and that provides a compelling interest, then that seems to be, we would say, troublesome precedent, that merely if the establishment clause is raised, that's sufficient in and of itself, not even to have a violation. And so that was one of the issues we were concerned about. And of course, the other one was, is how far does the free exercise clause go? Is it be retaining or attaining greater vitality? Is it coming back to being its own, being able to stand on its own 2 feet? For many years, as you all may know, the free speech clause has somewhat taken over in religious type cases where the free speech argument has been made and not necessarily the free exercise argument. But yet it's its own, obviously, clause. It should have its own provision. So what has Smith done? Is there a way to give some strength back to the free exercise clause, and so it has some independent meaning? So in drafting the cert petition, you're contemplating all these different issues. What appeals to the Supreme Court? What do they want to revisit at this time? Is it something too fresh? Is it something they don't want to touch? Obviously, what's the makeup of the court and who's going to be on it and how are they going to rule? And so there was really a lot going into this. I had thought originally that we should be able to garner more than, if it even was a 5-4 vote, but even after we lost Justice Scalia, more than the bare majority. And the reason of that is reading through back precedent, I thought we would at least have Justice Breyer and Justice Kagan. But as the experts kind of opined and the court took so long to set it, we started thinking, well, you know, could this be a 4-4? Because why are they waiting so long? You know, if this is going to be a 6-2, why wouldn't they just set it? And so that kind of fueled the speculation as to what was going to happen. But again, we originally thought that this case should reach a greater number merely because of the court, we think, has stated several different times in several different cases that discriminating solely based on religious status or forcing an adherent to choose between the exercise of their religious beliefs and the receipt of a government benefit, that was enough of a punishment to violate the free exercise clause. If you go back and look at McDaniel versus Patey, which we relied upon, even in the Smith case, Lukumi, the unemployment cases, they all seem to have that same theme. And so one of our goals was not necessarily to invent something brand new for the court or a brand new test, but basically say, look, the facts of this case and legally the program here fits those same admonitions that you've given in past cases. And so we're not asking for a new rule. We're not asking, for example, for Locke versus Davey to be overturned. But consistent with all those cases, you can find that this was a free exercise violation and rule that way without having to create something completely new out of whole cloth. So it was interesting reading through the separate opinions, how the different justices joined, obviously the footnote 3, and which we'll talk about that. A few of the justices joined, a few of them didn't. And then Breyer's concurrence, which is more narrow, a couple of the concurrences that were a little more broad, and of course the dissent by Justice Sotomayor, joined by Justice Ginsburg. So just to begin with the majority, it was, I thought, a very strong language in the opinion about the inability of governments to be able to open up some sort of government benefit program and then say, not based on any neutral criteria are you disqualified, but even if you are qualified under all other bases, you can be disqualified solely because of your religious status. And it actually went through and discussed the cases that we briefed, Lukumi and McDaniel versus Patey, and all the cases that discussed those type of issues, and kind of went through each one of those. And I thought that was kind of important too, because it really tracked the way we briefed the case, the way we argued that this was status-based discrimination. It was kind of language that was used at the oral argument, which is always nice to hear when you're arguing and the justices are kind of using some of the arguments you've put before them. The other thing I think that was important was the unconstitutional conditions doctrine, or that unconstitutional choice. I was asked some questions in oral argument. Well, why is this a free exercise violation? The church is free to operate as a church. The preschool is free to operate as a preschool. Just doesn't receive the government benefit for the playground, but it still can operate the playground. It still can do whatever it wants to do. And one of the responses was yes, but it can't do both simultaneously. It can't both operate as a religious preschool and receive the government benefit, which this court has said in the unemployment cases that choosing between receiving some sort of government benefit and exercising your beliefs is unconstitutional coercion, even if it's in a minor sense of unemployment benefits, or in this case, the reimbursement grant. So it was good to see that. I think that language is helpful. It talked a little bit about the unconstitutional conditions doctrine. And so I think it addressed that head on, that it's not just a free exercise violation when there's an outright prohibition on free exercise, or a punishment for the exercise of your religion, for example, being jailed or fined or something like that. But yet this is the same type of violation if there's a choice between, like in McDaniel versus Patey, where the minister there was not allowed both to be a minister and to be a constitutional delegate. He couldn't do both simultaneously, and the court said that's a violation of his free exercise rights because he was not allowed to do both simultaneously. So there were several concurrences, one by Justice Thomas basically questioning Locke, whether that's even viable, Justice Gorsuch going a little bit further and saying that this shouldn't be limited to just status-based discrimination, but also to religious uses, because there's really no principled line between the two. Justice Breyer tried to narrow the case just to the health and safety issues by his concurring opinion. And then, of course, a strong dissent by Justice Sotomayor, who basically said, the way I read it, is that any funding to churches is a sufficiently compelling establishment clause interest not to permit it, whether it's in the play in the joints or whether it's outright prohibited, that this shouldn't be allowed in any form or fashion.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. SCOTUS Cast is a project of the Federalist Society, a not-for-profit educational organization of conservative and libertarian law students, law professors, and lawyers, founded upon the principles that the state exists to preserve freedom, that the separation of governmental powers is central to our Constitution, and that it is emphatically the province and duty of the judiciary to say what the law is not what it should be. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast series, including SCOTUSCast and Practice Group Podcasts, on iTunes or Google Play. For an archive of past podcasts, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at fedsoc.org/multimedia. That's fedsoc.org/multimedia.
This has been a FedSoc audio production.